Working Cows Podcast, Episode 9.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
This episode of the Working Cows Podcast is brought to you by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. Our guest today on the Working Cows Podcast is Derek Schwanebeck. Derek is from the Sand Hills, Nebraska. He runs Cornerstone Grazing. The focus of Cornerstone Grazing is forage management and working with nature to maximize the operation's profitability. Derek, thanks for joining me on the Working Cows Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on. I'd like to just give you an opportunity to introduce yourself, kind of the history of you and your family and your operation and what you're doing down there.
Thanks. I'm pretty interested to see what we can find out.
What do you got going on down there in, you're in the Sand Hills of Nebraska, right?
Yeah, we're kind of the western Sand Hills. But right before Alliance, Nebraska and whatnot, where we get out of the sand hills, right on top of the best of the Ogallala Aquifer, and some pretty interesting environment. It's different than a lot of places, but it's pretty neat. I love it.
Sure. What's the history of the operation that you're on and kind of some of those things, the enterprises and different things that you've got going on there?
Well, originally conventional, you know, cow-calf yearling. I think my wife is fourth generation. We kind of leased that ranch eventually. And now it's a family corporation and we lease it, plus added some acres and lease other land. And I don't know where we got into more custom grazing. It was a good way, probably necessity. We needed cash flow and couldn't afford cows. And but it turned into quickly a good drought plan. So half of our stock days are dedicated towards cow-calf that are here year-round, and half of them are dedicated to custom grazing. So if we hit a drought or fire or hail or some kind of event that reduces our stock days, the custom grazing cattle, they know coming in that they're on the short end, so they'd head home right away or within reason. 2012 is a good example. They knew they were going to head home early. And so that's a lot about drought, and then that sounds easy, but a lot about cash flow. It's less risk, and it sells our grass for more, a lot more.
The couple of questions that come to my mind based on what you just said is, first of all, the necessity of a good plan in order to execute that drought-proofing strategy. Is that, you know, you guys have a plan based on, you know, what? When it rains or when it doesn't rain, I guess, is that what are some of those elements of that plan, or do you have one, I guess?
Yes. And to be not the heroic superhero, it's not written in a folder like it's supposed to be, but we have, you know, critical rain dates that we know we've got to have so much rain by this day, or we're going to have to destock, or we won't have the stock days we need. We also know what we did to it the year before and have an idea where and when we can stock. So, like, interesting thing for us, 2012 was super hard. we were majorly destocked in 2013 to give the ranch a rest. So that's reactive, not proactive. The proactive part is knowing where, you know, May, June, if we don't have the right rain by then, we're in trouble because and that's pretty typical for most grazing. And so we know some cattle don't show up or some cattle are going to have to go home early, mostly critical rain dates. And then knowing how many stock days we have, it's interesting. Like, I think this year was pretty hot. And even if you have the rain, what if you have record heat and it doesn't go just by rain? It goes by getting out there, walking around, really looking at the grass and seeing what your range is doing and what's going to be available. Or quality. It's funny, but people in Oklahoma are familiar with this. Grass will be super tall and whatever, but do a test on it and it won't raise anything because there's no nutrient value. Just watching the cows, really trying to be in touch with it. And some of that's an art, and some of it's just listening to the cows or smelling their manure packs, you know, seeing what they're getting out of what they're putting in. That's a long answer, man.
No, it's great. I love it. Seriously. some of the things you're looking at there are like fiber length in the manure.
For the generic boring guy, because I like to walk around and kick them, break them open, smell them. And yeah, you can tell real quick, seeds, fiber length is big. You know, how tall is that pile of manure? Middle of winter and cows are grazing a lot of roughage and stuff. They get pretty tall. Are they super flat or are they strung out for 4 feet? Then maybe we need to get some more roughage into them if they're too loose, which happens a lot for us in the summer. I don't worry about that too much, but the cows look thin when they're processing it that fast. Their paunch isn't full of stuff, so they don't look as good as big fat cows that are ruminating really hard.
Yeah, and I don't know.
I like to mess with the path. Yeah,
sure. Great. And I don't know if this is really within the scope of what we're talking about here today, but we've kind of been in a low rain cycle. I was talking to a guy today and he said, kind of based on my measurement, it's 3 out of 5 years at this point that we're below average rain. So I don't know if that makes it the new average or what. But anyways, we've been in this low rain cycle. And one of the ranchers that I was talking to said short grass will make fat calves and skinny cows. And tall grass or lots of grass will make fat cows and skinny calves. So kind of that thing you're talking about with the tall grass that maybe doesn't have a lot of nutrient in it. And you've got to really keep an eye on the body condition of the animals.
Yeah. Or it's one more thing to manage, as if the balance sheet isn't enough. Gosh, where did I get? Yeah. You did a nutball thing too. It's where you take, fecal samples on the entire herd, and we send that in. It goes to Texas A&M, and they give you a printout. Some of it's pretty in-depth. I just look at the protein and the energy. I'm kind of old school that way, and that's interesting. And what I've learned over a year and a half of doing these samples every month is that there's less protein in the winter than there is in the summer, but I'm hoping it'll help me with, as I get more years, which pastures are stronger and which pastures are lighter and things.
So let's talk about stocking. When it comes time to destock, how do you decide which animals go?
Well, typically, if we had everything we wanted, we'd have cow-calf, yearling stockers, and then something custom grazing as well. And depends on who's going to make us the most money. But if we had to destock first, usually those yearlings would go because they're the ones that can go to a feedlot. So if we're ahead and paying attention to our rain, we'll destock before everybody else does. So the market will still be fairly good. Those yearlings will get off the grass first. And then secondary would be the custom grazing people. And, you know, we should know by our rainfall when we're going to run out of grass. So we would leave earlier than they had planned. But it's, unless there's a fire or a tremendous hailstorm, it's not going to be like, hey guys, you got to get your cows next week. It's usually, hey, I'm calling you because we're going to be light and they're going to have to go home 30 days early or in 30 days, something like that. But depends on who makes the most money. But the last ones to go would be the cow-calf, because it's never any fun to have to sell pears when the calves are little or in the middle of a drought. We haven't had to do that, but I've sure seen it done, and it's hard on everything, especially your ego.
Yeah, and you're pretty exposed to the market at that point, right? Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Usually, yeah, because most people wait till it's late in a drought to sell, and then everybody else is liquidating, and it's just ugly. But
so how do you decide where your cows are going to be from day to day in this grazing that you're doing? Is it because it's May 1st, it's time to be in paddock one?
Oh, never. I did that this year. I had a couple of calendar moves that we did, two, and I had a third opportunity, and I learned from it. I know this stuff. It's never a calendar. It's a season or the way things go. We have a plan, and we know where we want to be about when we want to be there. And one of the big parts of the plan is we try to never be in the same place at the same time year after year. So always a different place. But so let's say this year, and we want to rotate from paddock one to paddock 10. You go out there, maybe everything was going as planned until you had this thunderstorm. And then paddock five is just a mud ball, and the cows are bawling and mattering heck when you get out there. Well, there goes your plan. So it's not a date, it's when it's time. Or we talked about the grass might change, so we might need to get out of there earlier. Or we're 60 days into this plan, and we've had great rain and perfect sun, and we've got more grass than we need. We either need to speed up and get places faster, or we need to slow down and graze more. Or this is harder to do, bring in more stock so that we're more efficient at what we do, or the opposite. It was hot and it was dry, and we need to either speed up and get out of there faster, or we need to destock. It's kind of like a giant slinky on paper. You know, you just have to be flexible to do it really good. And the focus is on rest periods. So it's not where we're at or how many critters we have at the time. It's how long we're gone from that spot so we can recover correctly. And if it's too hot or if it doesn't rain, we have to be gone from that spot a lot longer. If we took more than we should have, we have to be gone from that spot a lot longer. And that's the part to really manage is the rest period. And again, I got long answers for you, Clay.
I'm excited about that. I really am. Long answers are a podcaster's best friend, honestly. So, yep. No trouble here. And I hope everybody is taking notes. And I really think that these episodes that I've been able to put out have just been things that people can digest over multiple listens, because I've listened to them multiple times trying to improve, and there's just been so much stuff in there that we can go back and digest again, maybe like a ruminant, digest it more than once.
A lot of information.
Yeah, for sure. So I appreciate the time. First of all, I appreciate the long answers. We're going to take a quick break, thank our sponsors, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more with Derek Schwanebeck of Cornerstone Grazing in the Sand Hills of Nebraska. This episode of the Working Cows Podcast is brought to you by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. They understand the needs of ranchers and farmers, whether you need to take care of your livestock, horses, or even building supplies. They have everything you need to work your cows, whether that be the chute you work them through, the water you bring them to, or the tools you use to make them go up that chute a little bit faster. So check out kamakranchsupply.com for all of your ranching needs. And we're back with Derek Schwanebeck from the Sandhills of Nebraska. We're talking about custom grazing and kind of how he goes about deciding when and where to be. And so what are some of the tools you use other than the grazer's eye, as I've heard it called, I guess, seeing the land, seeing the cows, seeing what's there, seeing if they're ready to move, seeing their body condition. What are some of the other tools that you use to decide where you're going to be at what time when you make that grazing plan? Because it sounds like you've got a plan before you even turn out. And so what are some of the tools that you use to make that plan?
Stock gauge per inch of rainfall. It's a ranching for profit kind of tool. I'd love to say that we live by that, but it usually is something I get done at the end of the month to see just, are we okay or are we in the toilet? But it's a fantastic tool, and when you get using it enough, I mean, it's worth learning how to use it. If you use it enough, it can save or make tens of thousands of dollars a year. If somebody would just build one on a computer spreadsheet and then educate people how to use it, it'd sell, because it really helps when you know where you're going to be in a few days or where you're headed. The horrible story of trying to feed your way out of a drought, it never works. And knowing where your rain is and where your grass is going to be, it's almost like being able to foretell the future, because it's pretty obvious. Other tools that we use, can you just ask that question again? Because that part was really important.
Yeah, what are some of the tools that you use to decide when and where you're going to be, like even before you turn out, when and where you're going to be grazing for a given season?
I remember, but yeah, just like everyone else, where's the neighbor's bulls going to be? Where are we going to have to ship from? Where are we going to cap? When we go on vacation, if we're going to get that done, where do we want these cattle so they'll have adequate water? Or where's the water going to be when we're at this particular part of the cycle? Those things, stuff that changes from year to year, things that you may or may not be able to control and try to plan for or around. Otherwise, the big thing about where we're going to be is where we were last time and when we were there, so that like the seasonal grazing program where there's high growth, low growth, and dormant. So if we were in if we're in pasture A for the high growth period, we want to try and avoid the high growth period for the next 2 years. So whatever varieties, whatever grasses are there, they'll have that time to regroup, not just for their 45 or 80 day rest period, but maybe for 2 years at that growing part of the season. Now that sounds great, and I'd be a magician if we could do everything perfect. It hardly ever works out, but it's the goal, and it does build tremendous root mass for that.
Adapt, improvise, and overcome, right?
Yeah, that's what we learned at the Castle Marine thing. Improvise, adapt, and overcome. And, you know, I get to talk to a few people here and there, and that's one of the biggest things. The art of war, one of Sun Tzu's principles, is water. Water covers rock. Water goes around rock. We've got to be flexible. If you wanted to do something like this and be successful, the flexibility is the part that takes so much. If it's definitely not a set stock kind of system, it's got to be flexible, because things are going to go wrong. Cattle break out, rain, no rain, people die, and you have to walk away from the ranch, and it better be able to take care of itself for a little bit. There's all kinds of things that you got to be flexible for, and that's I don't know if you can learn that in a school, but.
Yeah, you mentioned root mass. What are some of the benefits of just at this point? I think what you and I are talking about, we haven't even touched on any kind of intensively managed grazing. I think that's the way you prefer to have it phrased. We haven't even touched on that. We're just talking about deferred grazing at this point. What are some of the benefits that you guys are noticing? You mentioned root mass. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. It's well, Nicole Masters was in America, and we got to listen to her talk. And she just loves the soil and all the microorganisms and things that are growing underneath. And so I like to mess with cow manure. I love to crack open the soil and smell what's down there and the roots and the things that are growing right around the roots. If it smells good, if it smells like, you know, after you mowed the lawn or when it's raining, things are going good there. And if it doesn't smell, it's kind of just dry. There's nothing growing. And when we use the animals to impact correctly, they will kickstart that system. And like a great indication, we go across a meadow and they will stomp down half of what they're eating. And where most people would put that into a hay bale, we're putting it right back into the soil, but it covered it up. It's just like somebody mows their lawn and there's a clump of, you know, grass that didn't get put into the lawn bag. In the middle of the afternoon, you kick that over, it's wet under there and it smells good. And some more organic matter we get back into the ground or on top of the ground, just like that, the more bugs, you know, we're talking warm and wet. That's where the bugs flourish, and the right bugs, and that helps the root mass. We either graze or we impact that plant life, which kills off roots below the surface. But they don't just disappear. They'll rot and they'll feed microorganisms. The microorganisms in turn feed the new roots that are growing. And it really turns into a system. It's like a bank account that you keep investing in, and you can live off a lot more interest when you don't take as much out of that account very often. And there's probably a level of production where you have to plateau somewhere. But we're in a lot of places. I haven't seen that yet. We haven't even got there. It's just the more you put back into it, the more it keeps going. I don't know if I can make sense to some folks, but if you ask the right questions, maybe I'll answer it.
I am definitely not here to tell people what to think. I am here to give people something to think about and something to chew on, you know, some of that mental cud to roll around up there from Monday to Monday. Hopefully it lasts that long. So
that's cool, mental cud. I like that.
You mentioned a banking analogy. Is there something to be said for savings as far as part of your drought plan too?
Like me putting money in the bank in case we have a bad year?
Well, we're talking about grass here so far. We haven't touched on finances yet, but as far as saving grass?
Yeah. You know, if we put most of our custom grazing disappears before November, and usually most of our custom grazing disappears before the 1st of September. And so a lot of those cattle are moved around in a way like bush hogs, and they're keeping all of our grass in a stage two phase. Or phase two growth, which is just great. So all winter, we've got stockpiled forage that isn't rank totally undisturbed forage. A lot of it is like an aftergrowth, really good, healthy. Even then, in its dormant stage, there's a lot of good forage out there. That's what we leave for the cow-calf that's there year-round. And there usually is some pasture somewhere that doesn't get grazed at all out of sheer luck, or maybe it was actually a plan, but there is something that usually gets rested almost 365 days. But to say we set aside something on purpose, it just seems to work out sometimes that we do, as in we didn't use it all.
Sure.
And that's it's good. But most of my plan would be if it drops out, we destock. And that's probably scary for most producers to even consider. How would you pull that off? without feeding hay, that's the safety valve for us.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. And Yeah. No, the cows are where you guys have an opportunity, or the livestock, I should say, are where you guys have an opportunity to, like I said, destock. So, yeah, that makes sense. So you mentioned stage two growth. I want to throw an illustration your way that I heard somewhere else and see if it fits what you're talking about. Stage one growth would be like infant stage. Stage two growth would be like puberty or real rapid growth. And then stage three would be kind of slowing down and more like, and I'm taking this illustration from Joel Salatin, and I can't come up with my other word to say, so I'll just say nursing home grass is what he calls it. And that's more of the rank grass that you're talking about, right?
Probably using different words, but I learned a lot from Joel, and so and hopefully we'll continue to.
Sure.
Yeah, that's tough, nursing home grass. But I would call it, it's older, it's lignified, it's already decided, you know what, we're good for the year, we don't have to grow anymore. And if you took clippings and sent them in, it's not going to be near as good as the value that's in the stage two.
Yeah.
And you could even graze it, and you're not going to hardly impact the roots maybe. Whereas this phase one, you sure want that to keep growing. And if you have to flash across that to the super high protein, great, but you don't want to take it to the nub. You don't want to do that to stage two either, but if you can knock that back before it gets to stage three, it says, hey, nobody's going to graze this year, why should we bother, let's just throw out a seed head and call it good, you know. They kind of locks down. But if it got challenged, it'd be like a corporation, hey, you know, we got some more stock to build before the sun quits for the year. And it'll build more roots, assuming it has water and rest. It'll build more roots and build more leaf matter again. And a lot of people have a needle and thread type of grass. That one is big in our area too. And if you don't graze it in the spring early, it'll shoot to seed. And by June, it's just a fire hazard, and it causes pink eye and, you know, lump jaws. But if we could flash over all of those acres and hit that needle and thread when it's like super good forage, exactly when the cattle could use some good protein. And by June, what we have is, it still might die and be dormant, but it's short. It never bothered to put out much of a seed head. And it'll still green up in the fall again if we wanted to have it again. But then there's the warm season grasses. You can do the same thing too. If you can hit them right and get off of them, big blue stem, prairie sand reed, some of those, they respond really well if you don't take them down too low, but yet you don't ignore them. So a seasonal stock pasture, the cattle will just pulverize what's around the water tank, but if you're to the corners of that two-section pasture, you might have the most beautiful blue stem you ever saw, because nobody even bothers to go out there and graze it. And so it'll be completely dormant, and like, it looks great. Something you can cut and put in the corner in your house to look pretty, but it didn't accomplish a lot for you. I keep losing the question.
No,
very
I think
excited
you covered it.
To talk to you, Clay. This is really cool.
No, I think you covered it. What are some of the techniques that you are using, that you're employing, to fully utilize the pasture that you're in? We've talked about kind of, I think at this point, would you agree we've basically covered deferred grazing, or not covered it, but that's what we've been talking about so far. We haven't really talked about any techniques here as far as how you guys are doing it to even further extend the production that you're able to get out of the ground. Is that a good way to say it?
That's a really good question. And that goes back to flexibility. And some of that, if we were going to say flexibility, could be that I probably am borderline ADD. Like, I can't focus on one thing. So, you know, if something's working really good, I like to screw it up just so I can have something to do different. And but the a good answer there is that we our ecosystem, and right where we live in our ranch, we have sub-irrigated meadows. We've got alkali lakes with swamp grass and cattails. And then the sandhills by nature, especially where we live, you can't impact them too hard. The sand will blow. If you hurt those roots or even open things up, it may blow for decades if you can't heal it up. And so on sub-irrigated meadow, the right time of year, we might be going, you know, gosh, we went around a meadow this year, 450 standard animal units on, you know, 3 or 4 acres every day. And but then if we want to go out in those hills, we'll expand that herd and give them room so they can't tear it up too bad, and we'll slow down and then we'll graze the swamp. Even we turn the right kind of stock to turn them in there, and they just love going out in the marshes and eating cattails and whatever they want to do. And then the time of year, so right now our cattle are in pastures, we'll move them around. They might be there a week, they might still be there for just 3 days, but it's dormant grazing and we're supplementing protein, and it's similar to everyone else's on corn stalks. They've got used up stuff that they're getting the rest out of. So you know, I'll go from a big pasture being a whole section maybe for 3 or 4 days in June. And then when we're moving along, we'll head on to a meadow, and we'll go down into 3, 5, maybe 10 acre paddocks, you know, for 2 days or a day at a time, something like that. And then we'll move to a different higher ground, and maybe we'll strip that. Sometimes we might go seasonal. Maybe we want that vacation. So we got this whole section, plenty of water, and we dump them in there for a week, and fine. We won't come back as soon. There's so many different ways to do it. One, the high growth season, we'll go into some intensive grazing or mob grazing, but cattle are on paddock A, they go to paddock B, paddock C, we keep moving around, but they don't get to go back. September, October, we did some major intensive grazing, but we didn't put a back fence behind them. They had all the space they needed. Every time we saw them go back onto the ground they'd already grazed, it was our indication of, you know what? They've eaten the goody out of the pasture. Time to give them the next paddock. And it was, I don't know what we'd call that one, but there's a lot to do, Clay, with listening to the cattle. You know, if you go out there and they're bawling and chasing you, maybe they're hungry. If they ignore you, maybe they don't need moved right now. Looking at their pats, looking at what they're grazing, it sounds like it's not possible, but quite often you might get cattle, they don't care at all. Maybe the paddock was too big. I didn't assess how much forage was there, or maybe that forage was just so powerful, they're not very hungry and I don't need to move them any sooner. A lot of flexibility. But if there's something I wanted to tell somebody who's interested in things like this, all right, you can edit this, whatever you need. My grandpa, he hated cats, and I don't know why, but he did. And I gave him this book, this Gary Larson book, as 101 Ways to Skin a Cat. And he just laughed his brains out at this book. But, you know, there's no one way to do it. And we could put a name on it, but it's just like you're looking for. It's an idea. It's to get people to think. And if it'll work for them and they believe in it, then they should go for it. And the flexibility of doing something different or being able to do something different or roll with nature, because she is never going to meet what we had planned. It's always going to be something. I mean, the farmers know this. You're never going to get your crop in or harvested like you're planning, no matter what the plan is, unless we grow them inside of a building. It's always going to be, for us, our biggest tool is the flexibility. And there is some experience there, knowing what the cows will and won't do for you, but and listening to them, because they will tell you, if you just spend some time with them and listen to them, they will tell us everything we want to know.
Sure. I think we've talked about
knowing your cows, knowing your grass as far as what mixes of cool and warm season grasses you have and when they're going to grow and when they're not going to grow. And we've talked about kind of knowing what you did last year. Anything else that we've missed as far as the things that are important for you to know as far as your grazing strategy?
Oh, not for grazing strategy. And we were talking about custom grazing, and I just rabbit trailed on you, Dad. Great. No.
No.
No, you said it. You summed it up really good, man. Know your grass, know your cattle, and watch that rainfall. Because you kind of know the sun's going to shine or not, but kind of close. But rain is huge. You can't predict that.
Yep, and it is the biggest determining factor of forage production. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And if I had to choose between feeding hay or just blowing money at Vegas, I'd go to Vegas. You could have fun. But if you blow the money on hay, you're just going to be depressed when it's over. That's me. That's an opinion.
Sure. Well, I appreciate your time today. Any resources that you would like to make people aware of, things that have influenced you, things that you are... there the resources you're currently learning from?
Well, I get a lot out of the Grazing Land Coalition. The Nebraska has a grazing conference, and those are always good. And classroom's great, but hanging out with people that do it wrong, or let's go with people that do it different, those just learning from other people, getting off your place and going to see how someone else does it, even if it's not, I mean, you could be in Kentucky, go to the desert and watch somebody in the desert do it.
Yep, absolutely. This is going to be workingcows.net/9. I will have links to the Nebraska Grazing Lands Coalition on that site. Workingcows.net/9 is the show notes page for this episode. Workingcows.net/8 was an episode with Fernando Falamir, who is from Mexico. And really interesting episode. If you haven't listened to it yet, go back and listen to it. He's talking about a lot of these same ideas, a lot of these same principles, a lot of these same techniques, and he's doing it on 6 inches of rain a year sometimes. Sometimes they get 20 in a day and they don't get anything for a couple of years after that. So it's cool. It's a cool deal to see that people are willing to try it anywhere, and that, as you have said, you have yet to see the place where that management style reaches a plateau in the production of the forage. Is that right?
Yes, the stuff works. And Dave asked a question now and then, you know, if you could increase your stocking rate on your ranch, or if you could double the size of your ranch, would you do it? And most people just figure they can't buy more land. But if you could change your grazing philosophy, it's like getting another ranch and not having to pay any more money. And that sounds, to someone who hasn't accomplished it sounds insane and impossible, but it is possible and it's not insane.
Yep. Well, I saw you shared with us at the High Plains Ranch Practicum, and it was a very interesting presentation. Do you give that presentation other places, or was that a one-off deal?
Oh, could you say that again?
Do you give that same presentation you gave at the High Plains Ranch Practicum other places, or was that a one-off deal?
I get to do it here and there. Yeah, I really enjoy that. Not to feel important, but the questions I get from people and the discussion is really fun.
Yep.
And hopefully bring in a little. I love talking to the younger guys and ladies that are trying to get into this, and they see that they don't have to have $1 million. That gets me very excited, because it's dark to try and get into ag right now if you wanted to do it conventionally. You've got to think out of the box.
Yep.
I one of my passions is to see our small communities growing, not shrinking. And I believe it's possible. And I'm excited for that to happen.
Yep, and I think the reason you said it's possible is because there's money to be made in agriculture if we're willing to think out of the box. And you have
there's a lot of money, yeah.
Yep, you've got a Facebook page called Out of the Box Ranching, is that right? or something, ranching out of the box?
Yeah, I don't post stuff as fast as I should, but it, you know, it links and it's fun.
Yep.
And I'd like to get more hits on it and get people communicating, you know, like, wow, that was stupid. Or, hey, why didn't you try this instead?
Because yep.
That's where the synergy comes from. I love that stuff.
Yep. Well, that was kind of, you know, my introduction to you was through that. And so I will have links to the Facebook page and your website, cornerstonegrazing.com, and the Ranching Out of the Box Facebook page. I'll have links to all that at workingcows.net/9. So be sure to check that out and see what Derek is up to. Derek mentioned it. We started to talk about custom grazing. One of the things that really was a challenger for me was, can you consider yourself a rancher if you don't own land or cows? And I think we are going to have to answer that question on another episode of the Working Cows podcast, but I appreciate your time today. Is there anything else you want to share with my audience before I let you go?
Yeah, Clay, you're asking. I mean, you get to edit anything you want. Nothing we do in this world matters other than serving God and getting the message of salvation out. That's more important than anything else we could do. The other thing is, people can sure call me. I'm happy to tell them all the things I've done wrong so that they don't end up doing them. And I do like what you're doing. So I want to say thank you.
No, thank you. I appreciate you sharing that. I could not agree anymore at all. It was a pleasure to have you on. And when I say I couldn't agree, I'm talking about the message of salvation, the shed blood of Jesus on the cross. I couldn't agree more. I will put you guys in touch with Derek through the workingcows.net/9 page. You can get in there and look him up and get in touch with him through those channels. So thank you again, Derek, for your time. I appreciate it. I've kept you longer than I said I would, but it was a very profitable discussion, and we'll get you back on to talk about custom grazing and anything else we can think of sometime in the future. Is that all right?
All right. Thanks, Clay. I'm really looking forward to it.
Thank you.
I would encourage you to check out cornerstonegrazing.com and the Ranching Out of the Box Facebook page, both of which will be linked at workingcows.net/9. Have a Merry Christmas, and we will see you next week with another special episode. I am not going to preview that one for you. You'll just have to tune in next week and see what that's going to be all about. I think you'll really enjoy it.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.